Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassam. The Dhammapada verse that I would like to begin with this evening, verse 155. On one level, it doesn't perhaps appear very inspiring or uplifting. However, it does contain a really important message. And so if the initial impression on hearing this verse is, oh, this is the last thing I need to hear, all the challenges that we're having to face these days, and on top of it now Dhamma talks are making us feel miserable, and I would encourage just not believing in that impression, and just because sometimes the medicine tastes bitter doesn't mean to say that it's not good for us. And so these teachings from the Buddha, I would encourage us all to approach with a sense of what is there for me to learn from this. And so the verse 155 says that those while who are still young choose to neither live a life of renunciation nor earn a good living, end up like dejected old herons beside a dried up pond without fish in it. Those who, while still young, choose to neither live the life of renunciation nor earn a good living, end up like old herons beside a dried up pond that has no fish in it. What the Buddha is wanting us to appreciate is the importance of committing to building a foundation in our lives. And, the story behind this verse is about a young man and a young woman who both grew up with wealthy parents, and however they didn't pay a lot of attention to their education. And when their parents died and they both inherited a lot of money and they got married, which doubled their amount of wealth, they didn't have the discernment to use the money well until they ended actually being very poor. And the Buddha pointed out, when he saw this poor couple, he pointed out how if only they had paid attention to their education, presumably both secular and spiritual education, they could have done very well. In fact, if they'd chosen the spiritual life, they could have ended up an unshakable realization of Dhamma. They didn't, and so as a cautionary message, as Buddha pointed out, that it's really important to build up foundations. This is not just something that pertained to Northeast India 2,600 years ago. And this is a teaching addresses a fundamental principle in life. The same as building a house, and it doesn't matter whether it was built 2,000 years ago or built today, that we all know that building a house that's going to last requires having good foundations. And likewise in our life, we need to build good foundations. And the foundations that the Buddha was pointing to was having confidence in true principles, or having faith in Dhamma. And if we don't have faith in Dhamma, if we don't commit to that which is meaningful, then the sad reality is that we miss out. And so one of our tasks in life, of course, is to find out what's really meaningful and how do we commit to it. What does commitment mean? What does commitment feel like? Related to this also, when Ajahn Chah had visited the UK, or maybe it was the US, and visited the West anyway, and went back to Thailand and didn't hear this directly. However, I'm told that he was speaking with a lay supporter, a lay friend of the monastery, and about the potential for the monastic sangha developing in the West. And when he was asked, you know, do you think, Lumpo, that the monastic sangha is going to do well? Is it going to prosper in the West? And Lumpur's response was, he had this expression apparently, to make what? Make lunge, it made you learn, which literally translates that if you don't go without, then you don't succeed, you don't develop. So this is the same thing. It's recognizing this true principle that we need to train ourselves to be able and willing to meet ourselves when we're not getting our own way. And to go without, what does that feel like? How do we behave when we don't get our own way, when I don't get my own way? This is one of the functions of the spiritual teachers and the spiritual teachings, is to give us guidelines, to point out these true principles and then help equip us with the skills and the encouragement to make the appropriate kind of effort. And certainly the culture that we live in, that goes in a completely different direction. And the affluence that we have now and the way we relate to it risks our just being convinced by the story that we're always lacking. We always need more options, to the point these days where it's well known, and at least in psychological circles, it's the condition of option fatigue is well understood. And there's so many options that people become overwhelmed by anxiety, overwhelmed by indecision. And if you get used to always picking and choosing, then the sense of I and my entitlement becomes dangerously out of balance. And gratification is the name of the game, according to the economy, the culture that we live in. We obviously all see this. And Ajahn Chah saw this, and I would suggest that this is what he was commenting on when he mentioned, "Tamayot, make lunge, or make you learn." If we don't go without, then we don't develop. So it's a training, it's a principle we're encouraged to orient ourselves with and to train accordingly. If hearing these teachings, you're inclined to think, oh well, that might have been true in agrarian society or at least in pre-internet society, and I would say we're doing ourselves a disservice. And, or I would say there are such things as true principles that we can trust in. And this is one of those true principles that we need to establish a foundation in our lives to be willing to go without and to study that, to study the experience, not to immediately default to our reactivity and distract ourselves when we don't get what we want. And merely reading about this principle or hearing about it is absolutely nowhere near enough. We need the experience. What happens to this I when I don't get what I want? This is what we need to be studying. And so Ajahn Chah was concerned that the monastic sangha will be so well supported and not go without and accordingly not develop. And if we look around and see in the world, who is it that succeeds? And even in everyday life, you can see that the people who really succeed are the ones who are committed, like in the world of sport. The commitment that sportsmen and sportswomen make to excel at what they do, or in music, musicians, and you know, probably it's true that Mozart and Yehudi Menuhin were born with exceptional ability, and however, they still practiced with enormous commitment, or medicine, or research, to excel, to really succeed, requires serious commitment. And so it is with the spiritual work that we're doing. Without commitment, then we don't develop. And the process of developing is really helped if we can have confidence that the Buddha knew what he was talking about. If we have confidence in the Buddha, if we feel able to say, Buddhang Saranam Gacchami, I go for refuge with the Buddha, I align myself with this wise and compassionate teacher who really knew what he was talking about. If we can say that, then that can be a powerful source of support. Going against my way is, from the perspective of the deluded personality, the deluded ego, is never fun. In fact, it can be enormously difficult going against my way. And how do we support ourselves in this commitment? Well, that's part of what having confidence in the Buddha, having faith in the Buddha is about, and trusting that the Buddha knew what he was talking about. And the principles, the true principles that he taught, like the principles encoded in the Four Noble Truths, trusting in that. When the Buddha taught that craving is the cause of suffering, not disagreeability, everybody experiences disagreeability. The Buddha experienced disagreeability. That didn't give rise to suffering, that just gave rise to pain. It just gave rise to an unpleasant impression, like the Buddha having to deal with the monks at Kosambi who were being disrespectful and not cooperating. Or as he was old and had arthritis in his back and sunning his back in the morning sun on Vulture's Peak. That's not the same as enjoying sitting quietly in the bamboo grove for the Buddha. It was disagreeable sensations. However, the disagreeable sensations were not the cause of suffering. The Buddha didn't have suffering because what? Because he had let go of my way. He let go of craving. There was no craving. And in considering this true principle, it's important that we differentiate between desire and craving. Sometimes, regrettably, Buddhists think that desire is the cause of suffering. That actually contradicts the Buddha, where he positively encouraged cultivating wholesome desires. And desires, that movement of heart, that movement of mind, that energetic dynamic we refer to as wanting or desire, that doesn't have to be the cause of suffering. It's the relationship to that momentum, that activity, that is the cause of suffering. Grasping to desire turns desire into craving. Craving is the cause of suffering. Having faith in the Buddha doesn't just mean like believing the Buddha's best. You know, sometimes people conflate conceptual beliefs with heart-based, trusting relationship with a principle. Faith or trust or confidence can be distinctly different from believing in some concept. Like if we think about having developed a friendship with somebody, and in the beginning we first met them, and maybe we liked them, maybe we didn't like them. However, over time we discover that we can trust them. This person is a friend. I trust this person. Doesn't mean to say that I know everything about this person. Doesn't mean to say I can read their mind or I know what's really in their heart. It's a feeling in my heart. I feel safe in their company. I can trust them. That trusting relationship is wonderful, and it has an effect on how we communicate with each other and the benefit, the nourishment that can come from that friendship. That's not just an idea. I mean, we do have a concept of friendship, and however, that feeling of trust, of safety, and of confidence. Well, I like to think of it as heart-based, and likewise having faith in the Buddha, having faith in the Buddha's teachings, the Dhamma, and trusting, having confidence in the true principles that the Buddha taught, can help us enormously when it comes to training ourselves with this commitment to letting go of my way, going without. We need to learn to go without. And how do we support ourselves through this? Well, one aspect is going for refuge to the Buddha. It is letting go of Atang Saranagachami, which sadly is normal for so many people these days. And is, you know, my opinions, my preferences are what matter. So no, true principles are what matter. What the Buddha taught is what I want to align myself with. And once again, because when we go against the momentum of my way of getting what I want when I want, all sorts of reactions can be stirred up. Anger. The untamed heart can react with intense anger or intense fear or anxiety. Fear and anxiety on the apparent level can be intensely threatening. Even though from a conceptual perspective they might be thoroughly irrational. This is unreasonable. This fear that I'm feeling is thoroughly unreasonable. That idea, that thought, doesn't necessarily deal with it. The power that's contained in the untamed heart can, as I say, make us feel intensely threatened. I can't handle this. Like, for instance, often, well, many people find public speaking very threatening, get very anxious in advance. It hasn't happened yet. You don't know whether you can do it. However, the idea that something terrible is going to happen, and the feeling, more than the idea, the feeling that something terrible is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, just that something terrible is going to happen. And that anxiety can be very overwhelming. If we go for refuge to my way, then my way is I believe in the stories that I'm telling myself. And that's very unfortunate. On a level of apparent reality, I can't handle it. I can remember, for instance, when I was giving up smoking cigarettes as a monk, and it was very embarrassing and that I was so hooked. And I somehow was inspired to play this game with myself that when I want a cigarette, I'll have to wait 10 minutes. And then there was this one afternoon or one day that I remember, I think if I remember correctly, it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I want a cigarette. Okay, look at the clock, have to wait 10 minutes. And the thought that I can't have a cigarette, apparently, on the apparent level, was terrible. I've got to have a cigarette. It's irrational. It's awful. And to the point that I'm convinced by it, I can't do this. So somehow that inspiration was effective because it broke the pattern, and something like 20 minutes had passed and before I remembered I wanted a cigarette. So, well, that's ridiculous. That apparent reality is a con. What the Buddha taught was actuality, the way things actually are, the truth. And so trusting in actuality can help us undermine the feelings of conviction that we've been conditioned to believe in. I can't do it. I can't handle it. And so once again, letting go of my way, going without the gratification of getting what I want when I want, can be very challenging. However, this is an important part of our practice, an important part of our work, and learning how to disassemble the construction that we believe ourselves to be, made up of all stories, like that story of, I can't do this, I can't handle it. And in the process, we have the encouragement to exercise embodied mindfulness, the encouragement that we came from the Buddha to, whatever we're doing, sitting, standing, walking, lying down, encourage the cultivation of sati, embodied mindfulness. Indriya sangra, exercise intentional restraint, not neurotic restraint, but intentional, skillful restraint, inhibiting that compulsive reactivity, like when you get an alert on your smartphone, say a message has come in, and you want to reach out and look at it, check it out. Who likes me? Who hates me? Inhibit it. What does it feel like? Going without that moment of gratification. You can exercise indriya samvara, exercise intentional restraint. It's like a form of strength, it's a form of competence. If I have to get what I want when I want, that's addiction. That's enslavement, that's really painful. So exercising embodied mindfulness, exercising intentional restraint, potentially drawing on the confidence that can come from living a life committed to integrity, the self-respect that comes if you know that you're a trustworthy person. Just the same as if you think of somebody else, oh, that person is trustworthy. I trust that person, they're not going to abuse their power, they're not going to take advantage of the situation. You trust them, and that defines your relationship with them. If you are somebody who honors your commitment to integrity, keeps precepts, then likewise out of that comes a sense of confidence and respect. Strength that comes from that. And the strength that comes from patience, likewise. And patience doesn't sound like a very impressive thing. Kind of sounds a bit wimpish, really, patience. However, as Buddha referred to as the ultimate transformer, paramanta potitika, the ultimate transformer. It's powerful. Not bitter endurance, not kind of gritting our teeth and resenting having to put up with something, but that choosing, saying, no. Can I choose to bear with this tedious activity? Or do I have to react? Drawing on that, if we've developed it, or cultivating, exercising it. So these true principles that the Buddha articulated and encouraged us in are all in support of what we have faith in, the freedom from suffering, and plenty of individual suffering and the suffering of the world. How do we react to it? How do we relate with it? Of course, merely saying it shouldn't be this way is not particularly helpful. We know that it would be good if it wasn't this way. Just complaining about it and blaming, none of that really helps. What can help is the confidence that comes from committing to this path of practice, remembering the encouragement that the Buddha gave us. It is possible to do something about it. Whatever situation we're in, it's always possible to do something about it. We're not victims to the situation when we can feel like we're victims. However, if we bring embodied mindfulness, if we exercise intentional restraint and draw on the confidence that comes from a commitment to integrity, exercise patience and wise reflection. If we have these other qualities in place, then maybe there's a possibility that the intelligence that we have can be used to inquire in constructive ways, creative ways, like this reaction that I'm having to this situation? Am I obliged to have this reaction? Do I have to get pulled into feeling overwhelmed by disappointment? Or is there another way of relating to it? Like, for instance, this feeling of disappointment, feeling it in the body, in the belly, in the heart, listening to the thoughts in our head, meeting the experience of I feel disappointed with some perspective, and then reflecting, is it wise to allow myself to get lost in it? Even if we have some explanation of why what happened in the past to us means that I keep having this feeling, is it wise to always dwell on the past? Or might it be useful to establish attention on compassion, like countering it? Like if we've invested in cultivating compassionate awareness, and say, for instance, it's the mood of disappointment. Instead of allowing ourselves to get pulled into it and lost in disappointment, feeling disappointment, and then imagining somebody you care about, a close friend, imagine them feeling disappointed, and then registering what that feeling, may they be free from suffering, feels like. The heart of compassionate awareness. May they be free from suffering, not just an idea, a sense of wanting them to not have such suffering. And if we've invested in this compassionate awareness, a cultivation of compassionate awareness, if we've invested in this, then based on wise reflection, then when we're feeling pulled towards getting lost in disappointment, maybe you can choose to exercise that wise reflection and refocus. And not allow yourself to get lost in disappointment or the fear or the anxiety that might be activated. So these encouragements that we're fortunate to receive from the Buddha in support of the practice of freeing ourselves from the consequences of unawareness. And let's also remember the very final words that the Buddha gave before the Buddha died. Strive on towards fruition. The very final words he said, strive on towards fruition. And that striving, it's not just like, you know, whatever. Well, that striving is supported by patience. And supported by kindness. Thank you very much this evening for your attention.